Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. I'm your host, Dr. Don McDonald, author of the best-selling book, The Underdog Curse. We give vitalistic chiropractors a chance to learn from the best around the world, discovering how they overcame their challenges and achieved success. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Now listen up, it's time to crush the curse. Hello, podcast listeners. Now, if you want to keep updated on what's going on in our world, where we're heading around the world, what seminars we're offering, please go to www.drdonmcdonald.com and sign up for my newsletter. Now, I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host, and I'm going to head down under. And for those who started listening to this podcast at the very, very beginning, you probably won't be able to find it on iTunes, but if you go to drdonmcdonald.com, and I think the third episode, you'll see I interviewed Dr. Martin Harvey. And he's my buddy from Melbourne, Australia. And it was funny, at the very beginning of this podcast, I kind of made it more general for just the general population. And as the podcast has developed, I've just become more specific to vitalistic chiropractors. So this is going to be really cool because Martin has a lot of great strategies for chiropractors. He has a thriving practice, has associates. He teaches all over the world. And we're going to dive into certainty, communication, and retention on this video. Audio, because you're going to be listening. We're in the video because we're looking at each other, but you can't see us. So welcome to the podcast, Martin.
Thank you for having me back. It's great to be on the podcast again. It's one of my favorite podcasts. Look forward to it every time. Not completely convinced I'll listen to myself, but don't be offended by that. I listen to the other ones.
How rude. You should totally listen to yourself. Yeah. Actually, it's really funny. Most of the people I've interviewed, if they haven't been interviewed before and they listen to themselves, they're all nervous before. And then after they're like, actually, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, you never know. Sometimes you say brilliant stuff and you need to have it recorded.
So you need to capture it.
Yeah, and you're like, wow, that was awesome.
All right, I'll listen to it. You got me convinced.
Okay, good. So what we're going to start with today is we want to start off kind of diving a little bit into certainty. And I know you train quite a bit with chiropractors on certainty. And so I was wondering if you could just dive into your kind of idea of certainty and how do you work on that?
So I guess my interest in certainty came because when I was really early on in my chiropractic journey, like when I was a chiropractic student and maybe that first year or so, I'd go along to workshops or I'd talk to chiropractors that I perceived as being, you know, really successful. And I would say to them, kind of, what's the key to your success? Or from the stage, they'd say, what's the key to their success? And a really common theme was that it was certainty, that it was this certainty that chiropractic would help people, certainty in their ability to deliver the goods, certainty in challenging situations where somebody's coming in with some weird health condition that they were okay to take that person on. And I sort of thought, well, certainty is something that I don't feel like I really have. So where do I get some of this from?
Where do I get some of that?
Yeah, it's a commodity. I'll just go and stock up on certainty. Like, I know from discussions we've had that you sort of had a similar thing, that there was, and I think it's pretty universal. We have chiropractic students in our practice, and I don't think it's changed. If anything, it's probably even greater need for certainty now than it was, you know, I'm probably talking almost 30 years ago when I was at the beginnings of my certainty journey. And when I went to people saying, well, what do you do, or listening to these talks, there are a couple of sort of tools for certainty that people would suggest. And the first one was to dive deep into the philosophy. So I dove deep into the philosophy. I'd listen to Reggie Gold. I'd read the Green Books. I'd read the Blue Books. I'd do all those sort of things. And I think intellectually and sort of from a self-development perspective, it's a really great thing to do. However, I actually think it has a really limited capacity to increase your certainty. Because if I look at the situations that most people lose certainty in, they're situations like you're in practice and you take care of somebody and they don't get the clinical results that they were hoping for. You know, they come in and they go, yeah, I'm not really sure this is doing anything. Like, I don't notice any difference. I've been coming in here for months and nothing's changing. Or somebody comes in and they've had like a really bad reaction to an adjustment, and you sort of go, oh, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And the interesting thing that I found with my certainty was it wasn't even, I had this sort of certainty roller coaster where I would go along and listen to Reggie Gold or go to a dynamic growth or whatever, and I'd come back into practice and I'd be all sort of pumped up and my certainty be at a peak, and I'd be telling people about the brilliance of chiropractic and how it could help them. But then one of these things would destabilize me, like, you know, or it could be even in a social situation, somebody would say, oh, you're a back cracker, or I hear that chiropractors, you know, cause strokes or whatever it was.
Yeah,
I would be shaken and my certainty would crash. But the interesting thing was it wasn't just specific to that sort of environment. I didn't then kind of bounce back out of that into the next interaction with somebody and be back to my previous certainty. It just kind of leaked out. And
it's like a balloon with a little hole in it.
Yeah. And I know you guys talk a lot about that refractory period, that we're always going to be shaken in various circumstances, but part of certainty is having a short refractory period to kind of be able to bounce back.
I think just a side note, because I think we always talk about borrowed certainty, because that I think that's totally borrowed certainty. Because when you get, because a lot of people will come back from a seminar on fire, all of a sudden, like everyone's coming in and calling, the books are going crazy, people are calling in, and then again, the balloon starts to go out, and then like 2 weeks later, you're kind of like, this is.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that sort of external, borrowed certainty, kind of not organic certainty. It's in some ways artificial because it hasn't been generated from you.
Yeah, yeah.
I sort of this era where, well, the path to certainty was through technique, that there was this magic technique that if you did just this one adjustment that got those clinical results, it meant you could have certainty in delivering the results, so everything else would kind of take care of itself. And we know that that can be this kind of roundabout of just constantly seeking the magic adjustment for every different situation. If I just have enough techniques, that's going to create certainty. And I don't know that I've had a lot of epiphanies, but I did have one epiphany around certainty. And it was, I was walking the dog in the park near my practice. And the timing of it was that it was the day after I had been driving around in my car listening to Australian Rules Football on the radio. And what had happened in the football match was this guy had gone down with an injury, twisted his knee, and one of the commentators on the radio broadcast was saying, oh, look, you know, if he's done a medial ligament, he's probably out for about 6 weeks. If it's just like, you know, he's strained the part of his hamstring, then, you know, maybe it'll be 3 or 4 weeks. And then if he's done his cruciate ligament, oh, man, he's out for a year. And I looked at it, I thought, this guy has no background in the health profession at all. He's just an ex-footballer. Yeah. But he's got absolute certainty about what the path forward for this person is. And the next day I was walking around the park and I was another woman walking her dog. We started talking, and you know, as it went on, it emerged that she was a physiotherapy student. She was in the latter stages of her physiotherapy program. And she was working in an outpatient rehab center that was working with people who'd had car accidents, but also cardiac rehab, a whole bunch of different things. And she was telling me the stuff that they were doing, and compared to the impact of a chiropractic adjustment and a program of chiropractic care, it sounded just pathetic, like, you know, really low level, just getting people just doing really basic, getting their bodies moving again, but no real sort of power of afferent input into the nervous system, power of, none of it. It just sounded so dumb, but they were doing it every day for months, except Saturday and Sunday, because nobody went in on Saturday and Sunday. So they needed it every day, but the days that it wasn't convenient for them to be there. And in listening to her, the thing that struck me as really, I guess, striking, for want of a better term, was that she had a really crap product compared to chiropractic, but she had absolute certainty in its value. And I looked and I thought, how is it that chiropractors don't have this? Football commentators don't have it, and football commentators do have it. Yeah. With no basis to it at all.
With no education at all,
Yeah. So I guess that's from there I sort of had this epiphany, flash of insight. Actually, it's not the philosophy, like that, yes, they have a certain philosophy and their philosophy is different to our philosophy. And I often run this exercise with chiropractors when I'm talking about certainty, where I would say to them, look, how certain are you that the body's self-healing, self-developing, self-regulating, that it's sort of designed around that? And if you're 100% certain, you know, raise your hands. And overwhelmingly, chiropractors agree that they're certain in that. And doesn't really matter where they are in that continuum. And, you know, there's some limitations of matter kind of questions around that. But look, in general terms, that's the way the body's striving towards. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at the next level around that, that if the is the nervous system central to the control of physiology, central to the control of how our bodies regulate, heal and develop? And most people go, yeah, look, I'm 100% certain about that. And some people go, well, how about the, you know, endocrine system and the neuroendocrine system? And yep, I get that. Is it a central part to it? Is it, could we consider it metaphorically the master control system? Yep, people agree. And then if we look at the next part of it and we say, so if there was interference to that and you could remove that interference through a chiropractic adjustment, wouldn't that be a way of helping people in every aspect of their life? Because they could heal better, develop better, function better, self-regulate better. Yep, 100% agree. So in terms of diving into the philosophy with more detail, I look at that and go, yeah, you can make more nuanced philosophical deductions, inductions. But the core of it, the majority of the principles that inform what you do clinically, you've just said you 100% agree. So you, there's not a whole lot more gain in certainty to me. There's a lot of gain for you intellectually, but in terms of certainty, it ain't going to come from there.
Right. And it's simple. And it's simple.
Yeah, it is.
Three things, right?
Yeah. It is super simple. And then to me, though, where people leak certainty, where they can go out and be pumped up by being in an event and then coming down, is that they haven't necessarily aligned their paradigm. And so I think of a paradigm as being less abstract than a philosophy, but in a chiropractic context, the paradigm is sort of the models of subluxation that you use to assess whether somebody needs care and where they need care and whether they're achieving results from their care. And then the rules that you have for yourself around what's your responsibility, what's the patient, client, practice member's responsibility, and when somebody does need your care and doesn't need your care. And so to flesh that out a little bit about how valuable that is, I would look at two scenarios. So Don, if somebody came in to see you in practice and their reason for being there was that they'd had some headaches that sort of felt like a bit of a, you know, fuzzy feeling behind the head. They didn't think it was related, but they were also just feeling, you know, a bit tired and not as focused as they would normally and just, you know, feeling a bit mildly unwell. Just on that basis, if you, now I know there's a whole lot more that needs to happen, but on that basis, do you think it's, how certain are you that you can probably, with a program of chiropractic care, help them with their reason for being there, but they're also probably going to notice a whole bunch of changes that they didn't necessarily anticipate?
Yeah, pretty much 100% certain.
Okay, yeah, sure. So then if we have another scenario where somebody's coming into you, they've just developed the worst headache they've ever had in their life, they're starting to have their face droop, they can't really articulate words properly and they're starting to lose control of one half of their body, whilst you can make an argument that they will probably benefit from chiropractic care further down the line, you can probably be equally certain that they have more urgent needs. They're quite possibly having a stroke and they have other needs.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So how certain can you be that right now isn't the time for a big cervical adjustment?
Yeah, totally. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the point is certainty, you can be certain something is your job. You can be certain something isn't your job, but where certainty starts to leak is where you're not sure where the beginning and the end is. So I kind of got a sore knee. Is that, you know, can you have a look at that? Or yeah, look, I need to lose some weight. Is that your job? So having certainty around the paradigm, like what is a subluxation? What are the tests that you do that say that there's a subluxation and when you've reduced or corrected a subluxation, and what's your job and what isn't your job? Really powerful in terms of creating certainty. And then the next step, which I guess probably leads into some of what we're going to talk after this, is if we look at alignment. So if we align our paradigm and our rules, our paradigm with our philosophy, then that certainty that we had around those principles carries through, and we're much more able to be authentically or organically certain. And then there's one more step, which is we need to have procedures that align with that. So we need testing procedures, we need our clinical procedures in terms of how we're taking care of people, and we need our communication procedures to be aligned with that. So
now, just a question. I know this, we're not doing a workshop, but just for someone, if they're just doing something at home, would you like recommend an exercise where they spend like half an hour or something like that? Like just kind of going the yeses and the nos kind of thing. Just something a little bit tangible, something we can work with.
Yep, absolutely. So I guess the key things that I would suggest, there's two ways of approaching that. You can do like a 20-minute exercise of saying, if I look at the key things that people tend to have grayness around, in terms of taking care of people who have spinal subluxation, is that your area? And most people will have a pretty strong yes. But then some of the areas that people probably need to clarify is, if you have, do you take care of peripheral joints? Because there's a little bit of a potential challenge there, in that if one of your premises is you can't tell whether you have a subluxation by how you feel, and you say, well, I do take care of peripheral joints, well, how do you reconcile that most people, if they're checking people for subluxation, aren't checking every peripheral joint every time somebody's in there, and their cue to do so is based on somebody saying, would you have a look at my shoulder? Would you have a look at my knee? Mm-hmm. So having some time to think about, well, is that my job? Isn't that my job? I think is a really important thing. Mm-hmm. Another one is, which is really pertinent in some areas more than others, is vaccination part of your responsibility? Is having a discussion either pro or against vaccination part of your clinical role? Now, in Australia, it's been decided for us that it's not.
Same in Canada, by the way. We're not allowed to say anything, no.
But I think a lot of areas, so if we extend beyond that, is giving people advice on whether they should or shouldn't take medication, anti-inflammatories or any other, is that part of your role? So just being super clear on where your role is, where your role isn't. Now, the other way that I think it sort of evolved for me is, if I'm in a situation in which I feel like I lose certainty, embracing that, going, okay, that's good. What happened there? What am I not clear on that is making me uncertain here? Because the truth is that if somebody comes in and they don't get good clinical results, that's not because the body all of a sudden stopped being self-healing, self-regulating, self-developing, and the nervous system stopped being the master control system.
Yeah.
There's something going down. So if I've got a clear paradigm of subluxation, and I've got tests that I can rely on to know, yeah, this person isn't changing at all, then I know that either referring them to another chiropractor or changing my clinical approach is kind of where I need to be with that person.
Yeah.
Whereas if that person's not getting the clinical result that they want, but all my indicators are saying that from the things that I influence, they're improving, then I kind of can know with that, well, maybe they actually need something else as well from another provider. So It makes me really, really easy. It makes it really, really easy for me to know with certainty, is this person, can I help this person, or are they better off seeing somebody else as well? Like, I'm not saying that you dismiss them from chiropractic care. Yeah. They've done really well with chiropractic care. It's just their body needs other support.
Well, I think that's a huge thing, because that comes with a challenge with research on chiropractic too, is that basically every single person comes from a total different environment. And so everybody has a different sleeping pattern, diet, food, exercise, the way they think, like all those things have effects, right? And so sometimes it is nice to work with other healthcare professionals to work on those things.
Definitely. And it sort of loops back around to those rules, where a lot of my rules aren't that things aren't important. So I believe that stress is a huge impact on, and I've had a number of discussions around how increased sympathetic tone is probably a huge part of why people have crap health. And it's a big tie into subluxation, the benefits of an adjustment in terms of sympathetic, parasympathetic balance, et cetera, et cetera. However, does that extend to your role should be a counselor for somebody who's having a tough time? Well, my rule is no.
Yeah.
And I have a rule around when I'm having a chat with somebody about stress and something comes up that clearly they're not managing well, I know my rule is, okay, here's, we refer to people who have a holistic approach in regard to that, and then we can offer them support in a way that helps that person. But I'm certain that it's not my job to listen to them bitch about their shitty marriage.
Right. Well, that makes it much more less stressful too, because yeah. I know just even with my personality at the very beginning of care, you're kind of like, okay, because you're trying to kind of please people. And so you don't have enough no's. So then you get in trouble, you get behind or sometimes you get into a conversation where you're like, oh damn, I shouldn't have opened that door. Like you're into it and you're like, that
was a good door. How do I back out of this door? Just quietly.
Totally. That's great. So once you kind of get some of your rules down, the foreign and the things you do and the things you won't do, how do you tie in your communication strategies with your procedures?
Okay. So if we look at communication then, if we've made a decision that what our practice is about is helping people live healthier, happier lives, that our paradigm is around correcting or reducing subluxation, educating people about a whole bunch of things, then we need communication approaches that align with that. And one of the things, though, that I think is a disconnect in that regard that is really common to chiropractors is that they have, it's all very front-loaded. What mm-hmm. I mean by that is that traditionally chiropractic communication sort of all evolves from, or the process that we take people through where we have a first visit process that we've kind of drilled and we've got steps to, and we know exactly, look, these are the type of people who are going to come in, different archetypes, and we're going to ask these questions and that question to get this response that we're going to plug into our report of findings, our day two, and we're going to do this test and that test and set out this plan, and there's going to be a re-exam, and that we've got to make sure that the CA stands up from behind the desk and eye contact, because these are our super important people who, it's very front focused. And that's right. A legacy of, look, I think Jim Parker did a phenomenal job of really creating structure around the profession. But a downside of it is that it's created almost an unexamined idea that the most important things are the first visit, the second visit, the healthcare class, the first re-exam. And if we do all of those things right, where people are going to get the big idea and we'll tell the story, and that's going to mean that people are going to have chiropractic care for life. And it's just patently untrue. Now, I'm going to back it up. I'm not going to make... And I definitely don't mean this in a way that's disrespectful to Dr. Parker. I think he did phenomenal things, but things have changed. So I want to evolve beyond that. So there's some really simple calculations that you can do. So what I tried to do with these calculations was go super, super conservative, like bare minimums. Like if that model worked, if people coming in on a first visit, second visit, healthcare class, initial program of care and a re-exam, that's what they needed to, all right, I'm in here for life.
Yeah.
There's a very simple math that you can look at. So if we were to say that you were seeing just 3 new people a week doing that, and you're doing that for 50 weeks because you have a couple of weeks of holiday a year, that would be 150 new people into your practice a year. Now, if you just really conservatively did an initial program of twice a week for 6 weeks, and I'm not recommending that. I don't think that's sufficient for the vast majority of people, but I want this maths to be
like simplistic, really, so you can see how
really and really simple. Like I don't want to rely on some really high level of intensity for it to work.
Yeah.
And then people immediately after that went straight to once a month. And I know in terms of wellness care, maintenance care, lifestyle care, that's probably a lot of people are going to recommend once a week, once every 2 weeks, but let's say once a month. So again, we're super conservative. After 5 years, you should be almost at 300. You should be at 260 a week and just growing steadily after 5 years in practice. The truth is I wasn't. And the truth is, I don't think most people are. And my numbers in both of those initial calculations were more. So, the confession I have to make is the confession that I think every chiropractor should make is, just quietly, not everybody stays forever. You know, just,
don't tell anybody.
Yeah. But the reality to me then, if we look at that, is most people are so strongly culturally indoctrinated into that symptomatic way of seeing health and healthcare.
Yeah.
That the norm is people are going to come for a period of time. And yes, you want to have a really good process initially to increase the probability that they don't drop out.
Yeah.
And also accept that it's probably a natural part of the process for a lot of people to do that. Now, this is where the distinction comes in terms of where I think you actually need to have a huge amount of focus if you really want to deliver the goods and you really want a retention practice. The reason that I think a retention practice is what you want or is it's better for people. Like right. They don't get great results if they come in and see you five times and leave with 90% of the nerve interference they came with. It's just not a good thing. They're going to get much better clinical results if they stay for care. It also, from our perspectives, makes it much easier to grow our practice, and it's much less stressful. If you've got people who are coming on an ongoing basis, you're not constantly sort of hustling to try and get more new people in the practice. You can invite more new people in because it's good for them, but you can be pretty relaxed about whether they choose to or they don't choose to. And the irony of that or the paradox of that is that's actually more effective, because if we look at relationships, if we look at, you know, people deciding based on, do I want to have a relationship with this person as a caregiver? It's the same as interpersonal relationships. Like desperation is not that attractive. I need you. No, please come. You got to come in. You got to come in. What can I do? What can I say? It's repulsive. But
right.
Whereas I think I can help you. I think this would be great for you. It's up to you. Ironically, paradoxically, much more attractive to people than, you know, you looking like you're going to shoot yourself if they don't come in to see you.
100%. And again, if your practice is struggling and you don't get very many new ones, if that one report of findings of the week does not accept care, that's like devastating to your practice, right? But if you have, you know, a great practice and you have streams of new people coming in and one person doesn't take care, you're like, okie dokie.
Yeah.
You know, we're here for you if you ever decide, and then you just move on, right?
Yeah. So I look at then, if we have this retention strategy around shifting our focus further downstream, yes, spend some time getting this initial stuff going, and also recognize that it's almost more important for people to have a process and procedure that is specific, and you treat people really as special when they come back in, rather than almost like I told you, I knew you'd end up back here. Like, you didn't do what I told you to do.
You know what? I had the funniest one is that I would quickly look at their file and then I would just like say, I bet you it's your left SI joint. And they'd be like, how do you know? And I'm like, oh, because you never stuck around to get all the work done or whatever. Like, that was the new one. It's really welcoming, you know? Like, welcome back.
Yes. Snideness is a great retention strategy. So the idea there is, let's put some thought into people who come back into the practice further down the line, or people who have continued on, how can we make it special for them? Because the truth is that if you look across any business and you look at the reason people leave any business, 1% of people die. Not much you can do about it. It's going to happen. 3% of people move and they shift to a different city, shift to a different state, whatever it is. They're no longer available to come in. A few, like I think it's 8 to 10% of people are attracted to another provider. So they go to another chiropractor because they, you know, had some offer, or they decide, you know, their friend said that they should go and see their massage therapist, whatever it is, you know, there's a certain number of people who are just going to go, I'm going to try something different. And then if you look at the vast majority, though, it's roughly around 70% in most businesses, 70% of people leave because of, they're happy with the product, but they leave because of perceived or real indifference. And we kind of create a culture with this focus on the front end that people who are coming in later down there, when we say our smart ass comments, or when we're looking at our notes instead of connecting with the person who's lying ready to get adjusted, we create a perception of indifference, or we really are indifferent because our focus is on people at the beginning phases. So I like to use strategies that try and create the same degree of specialness and connection further down the line. So if we were to look, for instance, at people who are in that reactivation, if there's a couple of things that make them ripe for us to be able to help them see health at a higher level than that symptomatic level that they probably are. And first of all, we already have a relationship with them. They trusted us once and they demonstrated that they trust us by coming back. We don't really want to throw that trust under a bus by making them wrong for the decisions that they've made.
Right.
So the second element is they've just had an experience that demonstrates that they're, or potentially demonstrates, if we frame it in a way, demonstrates that their way of doing things may have some limitations because they've ended up back in the same circumstance most of the time than they did. Or often, like, worse, you know, how if you don't correct subluxation and it's ticking along below the surface, most people notice that things get worse over time. So
exactly, yeah.
But if we don't make them wrong for that, if we ask them questions about it so that connection comes from within them, we have the opportunity to really authentically have them go, actually, I am open to doing something more over time.
Well, and it's great too, because in the beginning, again, depending on how you're educating it, you can explain, I always say the law of cause and effect, you can explain something to them that if you don't continue, this is probably what you'll expect. And that's one way to learn, just, okay, that sounds great. But then the other way is to experience it, right? So that's exactly what you're saying. They've actually experienced it. So they understand it because they've been through it. You know, they're not just going on what you say.
Yeah. So that taps into an idea from the influence literature that there was sort of two connected ideas. And I know you and I have spoken about it before, but it probably bears repeating that if we look at the behavior that we'd love for people to have, which is people choosing to come in on an ongoing basis because life goes better with chiropractic, that they're better able to do the things that they love to do, need to do, or see as part of their role or identity to do, having a nervous system less interfered with helps them be that. That's the vision, that's the behavior that we want. Mm-hmm. The only way you get that behavior is if their beliefs align with it. Right. So our role in terms of education is to try and change beliefs or create an environment where their beliefs change, is probably a more accurate way of putting that. Within the influence literature, there's a hierarchy of how likely something is to change somebody's belief and therefore their behavior. So beliefs change when you recognize that there's a limitation to your current belief. It doesn't explain that. It doesn't give me what I want. Whoa, what's with that? I've now got space in this brain for maybe there's a different way of looking at this. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a whole bunch of reasons why, but if you tell somebody something, really the weakest way of changing people's beliefs, they block and filter it. If it makes them wrong for their current beliefs, they tend to defend their existing beliefs through confirmation bias or just ignoring your message. The flip side of that, the highest level of impact on people's beliefs and therefore their behavior is what they experience. Mm-hmm. Somebody has some, I was living life this way and then my, partner said they were leaving me, and you go, whoa, hang on a minute. I've got to look at this differently. Maybe I need to talk to you more, listen to you more, put more time and energy into our relationship.
I'll put the garbage out more.
Yeah. Do your feet need a massage? What is it? Like, you know, it changes. Now then, if we look at it in a health paradigm, I'm dealing with things just reactively and then I have this health crisis. Oh, maybe that is the opportunity for me to need to get my shit together and do things differently. But in a chiropractic context, let's look at a really mundane situation where somebody has had, like, I'm not talking something super exotic. It's somebody who's just had headaches when they came to see you. It was having an impact on them. They were grumpy with their kids. They couldn't concentrate at work. They didn't feel like doing their hobbies, whatever they are. You take them through a program of care. They've got a symptomatic level of health awareness. You're telling them stuff about the value of ongoing care. They block it, filter it. They've got more important things. The headaches have gone. Dr. Don fixed my headaches. I'm good to go. Get these recalls from the office, but I don't need them. I'm good.
You fixed me.
You fixed me. Yeah, because they're interpreting their environment and the world through their belief system.
Right.
Now, if they come back and you don't make them wrong for coming back, for not continuing, If you just kind of go, oh, great to see you. So tell me what's going on. Headaches have come back. And you ask them questions so that they're framing their experience. You actually have an opportunity to say, look, would you be open to doing something different this time in terms of moving forward? And so key thing there is questions. And so if it would be useful, there's a couple of questions I think can be really useful as a starting point. Now, there's lots more to this, but just getting started can actually create the beginning of a process. So Howard, do you want me to?
Yeah, that'll be great. Like, and again, like I said, it's not a seminar, and we'll talk about if you want more information, get Martin when he does his events, but that'd be great. Just get a few questions just to get started.
Okay. So it's nothing super complex initially. It's really just, so tell me why you're here, normal sort of things, but sort of then asking that deeper question of what's this stopping you from doing that you need to get back to is a really important question, because, or what's it making it harder for you to do? Because that's going to start to unpack what the reason behind the reason that they're there is, mm-hmm. which is actually what's more likely to motivate them down the line. But more specifically to the experience that they've just had, I would ask them about that. I'd say, so if we remember back a year ago, had headaches and we went through a program of care and then you stopped and then here we are. Why do you think they've come back? Actually them making the connection, and mate, you can help coach them if they go, I don't really know. Then you can coach them. Well, what do you remember what was going on back here? But just coaching them towards that, but getting them to make the connection, having the time, space, and focus to allow that to happen with a reactivation. Part of that is procedure. You need to have a little bit more time. They're not just in for an adjustment visit where you've only got time to tell. You need a little bit more time to have a little bit of a conversation. But we have more time for people at the beginning of their care. Can we just create a little bit more time for people in this circumstance? Another question that I think is really important is to extend that beyond this current environment. So to ask them the question, look, so if we do the same thing where we set up a program of care that we work till just your headaches go away, what do you think might happen further down the line if you stop again at that point? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And how would you feel if that happened? Mm-hmm. And the reason how would you feel is a really important question is, another of the core principles in the influence literature is people decide based on emotion and then they need logic to back it up. So asking people how they feel allows them to create a point of focus on what the emotional resonance of the circumstance is. And once you can do that, it's more likely that you can create an emotional decision of actually, yeah, now is the time for me to do something different. Mm. So now there's a whole sequence of questions that you can run past that. I don't want to give people too much at once, but just having the willingness to just kind of move out of that role of I've got to tell you what happened, I've got to interpret it for you, I'm the expert, to having really simple questions that give people space, but also a framework for the experience that they've had, because they've just had the experience. If you frame it and create focus on those aspects, it's going to be much more powerful for them.
That's great. Now I know you've talked a little bit about some retention strategies, because that was great for reactivations, but yep. I was wondering if you just give a few tips in the first place and hopefully to retain them before they leave to get their reactivation. So if you have any ideas on retention.
Absolutely. So probably the number one, and so one of the ideas that I hope is coming across here is that if something's important to us, if we recognize something as important, we have to make it a procedure. Now, I'm not a naturally super procedure kind of guy. I'm a little bit more, you know, big ideas I love and concepts and connecting with people, those kind of things. But procedures are the thing that make it automatic. So I'm not having to think about it all the time. It's like if you've embedded something in a procedure, you don't have to be thinking about it all the time. It just happens more or less automatically. And so having the, if we look at the reasons that people leave practice, that the opposite of retention, the number one thing was that they're perceived indifference. Mm-hmm. So having a procedure around connection is actually super important. So, and it's a challenge in a chiropractic practice, because we're typically going, in terms of the people who are coming in on an ongoing basis, we often have them clustered together. So we're going from one person to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next.
Right.
And there's this period in between where we look at it, we're kind of doing this clinical procedure to one person while most of the time the other person's coming into, if you're open plan, into a space near them, or, you know, if it's not open plan, into another room. And then there's this period in between where you've got to kind of take notes or finish off with that person, and then be straight into the you've got to have that connection with that next person instantly. And you've also got life going around, like, you know, do I have tickets to the next Oilers game? Do I? But you've also got the arm running 15 minutes behind. I know that I've got that report of findings coming up, and I've got to do that. You know what I mean? You've got that, that internal machinations of the office happening that you've got to keep a situational awareness around on that macro level, while micro doing a clinical approach, but also seeing this person as a person. And then you've also got your life that you've got going on around that, that can poke its head in and make it more difficult. So to me, just making sure that the very first thing I do, as soon as I move into the space that the next person is, I make sure that I create connection with them instantly. Now, connection is one of those things, if you create it, it's as soon as you've created it, you almost don't need to then worry about it. But if you haven't created it, it's very hard to get further down the line. Once somebody's sort of gone, you know, if you walked into walking into a bank is a real classic, where, you know, they're doing all this work behind the counter, and that they know you're there, but they're just not acknowledging you. They're doing something on their computer. Like, that obvious indifference to you is very hard for them to, once they do connect with you doing the smiley, happy, oh, good to see you, it's too late. It stays with you. It's hard to win back. But if you, that immediate focus is not, I've got to get my notes done here for this previous person. It's like, I'm coming into the space with Don. I've got to create connection straight away. So if you, key things in terms of what creates connection, and this is more important now than ever, because people are longing for real connection, authentic connection. Mm-hmm. The level of technology in our lives, the fact that, you know, you call for help and you don't actually talk to a person, you've got one of those automated trees, and people want to look it up on the website, and there's not that real human connection in a lot of people's lives. Social media has a paradoxical reduction of connection. People feel more disconnected because they got this artificial connection to people's idealized lives. So these people are coming into our practice and they're starved for human connection. So the two biggies are eye contact. So if people are sitting up when you come into the room or the adjusting area, making sure that the first thing you have to do is create eye contact with them.
Yeah.
Creates an instant connection with people. Next best thing is touch. So if your procedure is people are lying face down when you come into the space, it's awkward for people to crane their neck up. But rather than tinkering away with notes or whatever, making it a process that you create a point of touch and closeness with that person instantly, that's the first priority, is a great way of creating connection. Now, it needs to be touch in safe places. Like, a lot of chiropractic techniques are, you're checking somebody's sacrum first. And the first touch being around somebody's ass is not necessarily super safe. So I'd encourage people to, shoulders especially, shoulders, arms, hands are great places. So somebody lying face down, hand on their upper back or shoulder, great to see you, Don. Let's have a look and see how you're going, is a great way of creating connection instantly. So
that's great, because I know when I go in, I'll like put my hand on their back and I actually just hop my head down, and then they just turn their head to the side and I'm like, how's it going? So then you can kind of get both at the same time. And now you're like, I'm with you. I gotcha.
Yeah. So the second, the element that you added to that, you added a couple of elements that I think are really important parts of that connection process. And all of this happens in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
You had touch, but the next thing that you said was closeness. So closeness creates intimacy. So there's that idea of personal space, and it's varying, and you don't want to, invade somebody that you don't know's personal space. The close talker thing, it feels creepy and weird. But once you have a relationship with somebody, that closeness creates that intimacy. And really important to remember that people, we are wired to be, we have the same genetics and therefore the same neurology, as hunter-gatherers. So if you think of a hunter-gatherer, they are wired to be tribal, to have these intimate social connections with a small number of people, and that survival was dependent on that the connection with those 75 to 150 people who were in your tribe. And the things that you would have with those people is a lot of eye contact, because you could trust people if you had eye contact. There'd be a lot of touch, there'd be a lot of closeness. So in a way, we're tapping into the wiring of people's brains to correctly communicate, look, I do really care about you, and I'm making it a priority beyond the sort of processing of people.
Mm-hmm. And I think I just personally, I appreciate that too. Like I like that. Like it doesn't matter where I go to, when you get that connection, and even someone touches you on the shoulder or something like that, it just makes you
feels good.
I got you. Yeah. You got it
feels
me.
Good. Yeah. So number one thing I would say in terms of retention would be to have that connection. And then there's lots more that you can dive into it. There's procedure after procedure or strategy after strategy you can just embed in a few seconds to a process that allows you to have really efficient time, but a time that creates massive value and connection with people.
That's awesome. Well, that's great. Well, our time just flew by so fast. I haven't had a chance to talk to you. Hopefully we'll see someone in real life sometime soon here, because it's been
absolutely.
I'm deficient of my Martin time. So
likewise, it'll be good.
Yeah. So I like to always end the podcast with my guests just giving a couple minutes of their words of wisdom. And so, you know, you got chiropractors out there that feel like an underdog, or they just like feel like they've been a little bit burnt out, or maybe a little bit stagnant, or what kind of, and again, it could go around certainty or retention, or can just kind of come out the top of your head, but what kind of words of wisdom can we leave our listeners with for today's podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think if we think of those, particularly people who are having a challenge, and it works for us if we're feeling great about things as well, to look at chiropractic and think, chiropractic has the potential to help everyone, because mm-hmm. having a body that works better allows everybody to do the things that they love to do, the things that they have to do, or the things that they see as their role or identity to do. There's nobody who can't benefit from chiropractic in that context. Mm-hmm. So you can, I guess, create a degree of, well, I can be grateful that I have the opportunity to deliver that. And then I guess that coming out of the discussion that we've had, creating that moment for connection for the people who are coming to see you is going to create a couple of things. First of all, it's going to create an improvement in those people's lives, because of that, the value. We feel good when we're connected to other people. Mm-hmm. It's reciprocal though. You're going to feel better for having that connection. Parker used to talk about present time consciousness.
Yeah.
They talk about, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi talks about flow, that state where you can perform at a higher level. All of them are really about having that discipline to be completely immersed or focused on what you're doing. And having that almost meditative approach of, well, translating present time consciousness into action is really driven by this process of at the beginning of every interaction, making sure I connect with that person. So I'd encourage people to just do it as an experiment. I'm just going to, for the next day, make sure that every interaction at the beginning of it, I'm creating connection before anything else, connection before clinical care, connection before I'm then, you know, processing this person in whatever way, and see how that changes both the way you feel in terms of, actually, this is a pretty gratifying thing to do. I can be incredibly grateful for the 5 people, or the 10 people, or the 100 people that came in and I had an opportunity to connect with. And it will then drive you to a higher level, because it's going to address the reason that 70% of people leave your practice.
That's awesome. Now, if people were wanted to get contact with you, because I know you do different workshops and stuff all around the world. Do you have a website or something that they can see where you're at?
Yeah. So website is insideoutpractices.com. And one of the things that I'd suggest for people who, if this is new ideas for, sign, I have a newsletter where pretty much every week I will email out a video Most common one that I do is one called Whiteboard Wednesday, where we do just a little snippet, typically between 3 and 10 minutes, a communication strategy that'll help you create better results in your practice. So,
how the hell did I not know about this? How come I'm not really? On your email?
You're list not on my mailing list. Yeah.
Damn it. Okay, I'll have to do that.
Cool. I'll add you, Don. Add me.
I'll appreciate it.
Yeah. I do workshops, both in terms of in-person workshops, and I also do a lot of the stuff that we're talking about as online programs, as far as webinars that you can do live or do via the recordings.
That's great. Well, everyone, Martin has awesome stuff, and he's an awesome dude. So look his stuff up and keep in touch with him. So thank you, buddy, for being on the podcast again. I really appreciate it. We appreciate you.
My pleasure. I feel especially special to be a second timer. Yes.
Your second timer. There's only a few on the planet so far that are.
My goal is to catch up to Brandy.
That might be a little bit hard because she's my rock. So she's on lots. So
she's a rock star. She's awesome.
So thanks very much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I loved it.
Everybody out there, you know, we covered lots of great stuff. You want to definitely listen to this again because we want to make sure we have our certainty. We want to have everything matched up, everything aligned. We want to make sure we keep our communication rocking all the way through so we don't get those people that just leave because we're stagnant and boring. And our retention strategies, when someone comes back in, don't do what I used to do and say, yeah, I guess it's your right SI because you're stupid because you didn't follow through the care plan. So with that note, get out there and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.